What? I can't believe I'm hearing this. Wait a minute, let me rewind.
Welcome to Wise Words, a podcast of interviews, best practices and insights for entrepreneurship, finance, and technology, brought to you by the IBD Network, home of the Under the Radar Conferences and Dealmaker Forum. For the best of Silicon Valley, go to www.ibdnetwork.com.
Look at me. Look at me. Now listen very closely.
That doesn't look like the next generation of computing to me. It's old technology.
Welcome to Wise Words, a weekly podcast of interviews on entrepreneurship, finance, and technology.
Who the hell do you think you are?
I'm your host, Sean Wise. Welcome back to the Wise Words podcast. Thanks for joining us. Today you're in for a special treat as we cover part one of a two-part podcast with Mr. Len Brody. And Len tells us why Canada doesn't suck. For those of you who don't know Mr. Brody, he is one of Canada's leading technology evangelists, two-time best-selling author, venture partner with both GrowthWorks and Mobility Ventures out of Texas, and serial exit entrepreneur. Len, thanks for joining us today on the Wise Words podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to hear your voice once again. I don't think we've seen each other since we both spoke at the Worldwide Wireless show down in Vegas. I hope you're still doing well. I hear there's good news on your latest startup, Now Public.
Yeah, no, we just closed a seed round, a pretty large angel round for Canada, for the web, about $1.4 million, and we're excited. Now, the good news is the money's in the bank. The bad news is now we have to work.
Absolutely. Now, this isn't your first venture. You're most known for being associated with the largest internet IPO. I guess that would be the largest internet IPO prior to Google, in a company called Onvia. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience there?
Yeah, sure. Founded by a guy named Glenn Ballman, a good Canadian boy from Wilcox, Saskatchewan, and I joined as one of the sort of founding executives of the company. And we were the classic Web 1.0 dot-com boost company. I always use boost instead of bust, but we were we started in Vancouver, and we were kind of the Amazon of small business, selling product and information to small businesses, grew to about... I think we're at 450 employees and then about $160 million in revenue. And then I sold, as the market went down, the Canadian company was outperforming the American company in terms of metrics. So we sold it to Bell Canada in July of 2001. And the U.S. company is still going strong today and actually turned out to be a pretty cool survivor story.
Now, you've recently been associated with Now Public, which is one of the first Web 2.0 companies, along with Ambient Vector and now DabbleDB, to receive funding. Can you tell us a little bit about Now Public?
Sure. Now Public is turning out to be, and what we're building is effectively the largest open source on-demand news network in the world. So we are effectively an army of virtual reporters and citizens that act as sort of eyes and ears where news happens every minute of every day in every corner of every city. And we capture that through our reporting system and then allow major media content owners of all kinds to make sense of that. And basically what we've done is built out, we're now at 22,000 reporters in over 135 countries and growing every day. So we're building one of the fastest growing news agencies in the world.
Len, you just said 22,000 reporters. If I'm not mistaken, that makes you the biggest news service. Like, that's bigger than Associated Press or Reuters, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you looked at a pound apples-to-apples basis, it would be a bit of an unfair comparison, only because some of our reporters are of course, amateurs and aren't reporting on the same level or frequency that would be AP or Reuters. But even if you compared it apples-to-apples and you looked at our numbers of the people who do contribute regularly versus the numbers of those other news agencies, we are larger. Yeah, so we would have a larger base.
Now, isn't it true that the picture of the year came from a company or came from an on-the-street kind of amateur reporter from the London subway? So you may say that, you know, maybe it's not apples to apples, but if that picture was taken and it was the most newsworthy picture, I think Time called it the most newsworthy picture, don't you really have the next wave in citizen journalism?
Yeah, I mean, the photo you're talking about was the shot from London bombing, which was taken by a blogger, a photo blogger, and he uploaded the photo immediately to his mobile blog, and it just went out over the wires to everybody. And unfortunately, the good news for him was that it was considered by Time to be the photo of the year. The bad news for him was that he didn't get credit for taking the shot. So it's an interesting dichotomy, but we are now moving into an era where major media no longer controls the first scene reporting. In fact, they're going to be more and more reliant day by day on people like you and I to get that coverage for them, and then they'll take the professional journalists and wrap and package content around it. And to put that in perspective, during Hurricane Katrina, we had more reporters on the ground in the affected areas in Louisiana and Mississippi than Reuters had staff in their entire organization.
In a weird kind of art imitating life or life imitating art, I went to see the movie Superman Returns last night. I don't know if you've seen it, but the shot that the journalist in the Daily Planet get compared to is taken by a 16-year-old kid with his cell phone who uploads it to a news service. It's too bad you couldn't get any product placement for Now Public, but that's the shot that they go with. So do you see that happening in the future, where the shot that really sets off the media frenzy, really informs the nation, isn't taken by a formal news organization with all sorts of censorship, but is taken by people with feet on the street?
Yeah, I think it's not only a futuristic view of the news, it's what's happening today. So I think you're seeing more and more of that occur. It's just we enable to disintermediate that process. We don't have to get to a situation where you have to go and call up the photo editor and call up and try to sell the photo. You're at a place where folks know to look to find that content, and there are other places like that. Flickr is one of the best citizen journalism properties on the web. We just provide a greater and deeper tool set for citizen journalists than does Flickr. But I think you are now moving in an era, no doubt, where we're in a place that most of the coverage for the majority of the events that are going to affect people's lives will come from the readers and the people around them and not from professional photojournalists.
You know, it's interesting. I was speaking to Katarina from Flickr about a month ago, and she said that the site's really moved forward and that she views it as the eyes of the world. So if it's the eyes of the world, I guess you're the mouth of the world, allowing people to really be able to bring the news directly to the people.
You know, I think the Flickr folks have figured out something very important that I think a lot of the other 2.0 companies should take a really deep, hard look at. If you look at Dig and Delicious, those communities which were intended to be open, social and democratic communities where people were valuing and judging news have really kind of collapsed on that model and become quite segregated and, in fact, really almost very high schoolish in the sense that it's kind of at a place where everybody is popular or not popular. And Flickr, the magic of Flickr is that it's a place where everybody feels welcome. And so wherever your photos are, whatever they're referring to, no matter if they're just interest of you, to your family, to the world, you put them up on Flickr and you've got a home. And we are taking a very similar philosophy with Now Public, which is you write a blog. I was just down in Silicon Valley meeting with a couple of the VCs there, and one of them was saying, you know, why would I reblog content on Now Public? Why would I post a story? And the answer was because 90% of the blogosphere doesn't get any coverage whatsoever. And by posting on Now Public and us making you feel welcome to post whatever you want, not only your original content but stuff that's existing on your blog, I took three of his stories that were a year and a half old, and in 2 hours he had 140 people looking at these stories that would have never seen them before that would then potentially take that story and post it to Dig or Delicious as an intermediary, as a third party. But we tend to amplify that for people, and it works very well. We are basically your own personal Reuters.
You know, it's interesting, Len. I've known you for a long time, and I've seen you do a lot of great advisory and strategic work, both for the federal government, both for venture capitalists, and, of course, for entrepreneurs. I know you and I sat on a board together. But for this really to be the company that you've sort of placed your focus on and your name on, it really must be something special. I want to take a step back. I think many people may know you from Now Public, but they may also know you from your wonderful books, Innovation Nation, and the follow-up, All I Learned. I always get the name wrong. It's All I Learned from Business I Learned from Canadians, or have I screwed it up again, Len?
It's everything I needed to know about business. I learned from Sean Wise.
You know what? I only wish I was quoted in the book. Maybe one day my value will equal my ego and I'll get an opportunity. But I want to cast a light on it. You know, people say that Canadians really don't give themselves enough of a tooting of the horn. And you and I are quite strong in the belief that Canada is one of the greatest countries. What inspired you to write the books?
It was honestly pretty simple. When I did a lot of advisory work for the Canadian Ministry of International Trade, I guess now DFAT, the Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade, we realized very quickly that we had a very, very strong story to tell in this country. And when it came to technology, we were pound for pound, right across the board, outpacing a lot of other countries that were getting a fair amount of props and love from other reporters and other investment vehicles. We just weren't seeing it here. And when you looked at the story, it was unbelievable. Not only the global companies founded by Canadians, but also the companies founded and still in this country. So I think I was just motivated by the fact that it was a story that was dear to my heart. It was not well known. I still get people reading those books, going through it, thinking, I didn't know this guy was Canadian, or I didn't know this woman was Canadian. And it's an amazing story. And I think what it's done, I hope, in some very, very small way, is just allowed younger entrepreneurs in this country to realize that they can do it. You know, people have done it from Calgary. They've done it from Vancouver. They've done it from Moose Jaw or from, you know, Goose Bay. It doesn't really make a difference. And I am very proud. I mean, you've been a part of Under the Radar, and the Canadian companies that go down there tend to hold their own quite nicely. And I think we are in Vancouver and Montreal and Toronto outproducing so much that's going on elsewhere in the States and in Europe that we have a lot to be proud about.
Well, let's just, before we move on, let's just prove that fact and make sure that you're not smoking BC's number one export. Let's just talk about a few stats that you were kind of surprised when you compared them against the global economy that came out that Canada was on top. Do you have any that quickly come to mind?
Sure. I mean, if you look at from a technological perspective, we are considered, actually, even take a step back, look at general business before you get specific. The World Competitiveness Yearbook and The Economist rated Canada as the best overall business infrastructure in the world. We were rated by the World Bank as being the fourth easiest place in the world in which to do business. The World Competitiveness Yearbook, again, as I mentioned, rated us as the fifth most competitive economy in the world. But the great thing about it is if you go deeper and you look and you think of where this country was 12, 15 years ago, now The Economist and many other publications rated Canada, not China, not India, not the United States, but you know, this little country of 32 million people, rated us as being the most competitive economy in the world projected for the next 4 years. So whether you factor its technology, oil and minerals, water supply, Canada is positioned in a place right now where we are about to become strategically and economically one of the most important nations on the face of the planet. And from a tech perspective, that just drills down even better. If you look at any subsector in technology, slice it any way you want, slice meaningfulness in the top five by revenue, by top of mindness, by brand, by market share, you name it, and guaranteed in 90% of the cases there will be a Canadian-founded or Canadian-led company in that top five.
So why
and
do
we
you think,
be proud of that?
And I totally agree with you, and I would encourage people to start wearing their Canadian flags on their lapels, but why do you think we're such a quiet giant?
You know, part of it is cultural. I think Canadians, you know, we always get asked why is this? Why are Canadians so good at technology? And the answer, you know, I'm no sociologist, but the answer that seems to keep coming back all the time is that we're in a place where we're one of the few nations in the world that has technology as a part of its inner fabric. You know, we had a huge geography problem in this country, and what ended up happening was we could only use technology to keep St. John's, Newfoundland, and Victoria, and Baffin Island united. And so it was just embedded in our brains that any time there was a new piece of technology that could help create an identity, help keep the country closely tied together. I mean, we were the ultimate remote workforce before that term was even identified. So that's where it comes in our fabric, because we were born with it. We were bred as adopters of technology. But more importantly, I think Canadians don't talk about it a lot because I think it's considered, somehow in our weird business psyche, it's considered rude. It's considered bragging. And unfortunately, we just haven't learned the art of the difference between bragging, bravado, and just being proud and spreading the word and being good at marketing.
You know, one of the things that always amazes me, Len, and I know it'll come as no surprise to you, of course, as a historian and proud Canadian, is, you know, Alexander Graham Bell didn't just invent the phone. He had specs and patents that led to the cell phone. Marshall McLuhan, the great mind of media, talked about the global village in the 60s before the internet. He talked about technology linking together. People remember number 99 out of Edmonton, Wayne Gretzky. They remember Michael J. Fox from Family Ties, but they don't remember some of the backbone that our founding entrepreneurs of this country really brought together.
Yeah, and you know, and the problem is you got these different claims on the lives of many of these folks. You know, Alexander Graham Bell is also claimed by Scotland and Canada. So the question, I think, is the more that people can figure out the linkages, I don't care as much about people outside of Canada caring and understanding the story. For me, it's much more important that young Canadians understand it, because the more they get that they can build world-class companies, world-changing companies, sitting in their backyards in this country, the better off we will be, and the rest of the world will figure that out in due time.
And that concludes part one of our two-part interview with Mr. Len Brody, best-selling author and serial entrepreneur. In our next podcast, we'll talk to Mr. Brody about his 8 golden rules for entrepreneurship. Hope you can join us. For more information on this podcast, www.seanwise.com.
Silence! Fool chatters, but the wise men listen.
You've been listening to the Wise Words podcast, brought to you by the fine folks at IBD Network. For the best of Silicon Valley, go to www.ibdnetwork.com. Tune in next week for more best practices, insights, and interviews on entrepreneurship, finance, and technology. Till then, I'm your host, Sean Wise. You can reach me at www.seanwise.com. Thank you, and good venturing.